Yeah, this is Dave Pickett, vocalist of Panic Attack, and I'm here with Harold Hottestad, the producer, to talk about the song Holding On, the lyrics, what they mean, and why we wrote it.
Hello, Dave.
Hi, Harold. How are you?
I'm doing quite all right. How are you?
I'm good.
You here to talk about some song?
Yeah. We released a song. We did one early release that we called the demo. It was called Holding On. And that was our song about suicide.
You like talking about suicide, don't you?
Well, you know, I guess so. Somebody has to.
Yeah.
And September 10th is Friday, which is probably when you'll be listening to this, or actually you might be listening to it on a different date altogether. But 2021, Friday, September 10th, it's World Suicide Prevention Day, and that's a good day to talk about suicide.
Very good day to talk about suicide.
Mm-hmm. I think every day is, but yeah, sure, especially on the 10th.
Do you build do you support that though? Do we need, or do you, why is it important that we have our own special day where we pay extra attention to preventing suicide?
Because we spend the other 364 days of the year ignoring it, and even the people who are affected by it, I think, would still rather pay good money to not discuss it.
Yeah.
And for the people who are going through suicidal ideation and really hardcore depression, talking about it is one of the few things you can actually do to prevent it. You know, all the money in the world won't help it. It's not like stem cell research is going to help it or anything else. It's really just being able to have the dialogue that I think will help at least some, not all. Some are just going to do what they're going to do, but some. And, you know, we've been doing Suicide Fest with musical bands the last 5 or 6 years. And preparing for that every year, I would look up suicide statistics, et cetera. And last year, I noticed there was something that I had completely overlooked. And then you have the number of people who commit suicide in a year, and those are the people who have died. But the number of people who've attempted are 10, 20, sometimes 30 times that number.
Oh, yeah?
And you know, that's not something that people want to discuss.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And I think trying to talk to that group is just as important, you know what I mean, is the people who've lost people or, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
What is it that's so difficult, to talk about? Why is it so difficult to talk about suicide?
You know, I was in Norwegian class the other day, and we were covering in the book about doctors and hospitals and, you know, that type of stuff. And so the instructor asked, she was going down, "Do you have any pain?" You know, she wanted, "Oh, my foot hurts, my back hurts." Yeah. And I was depressed as fuck. And I'm really vocal about that stuff, but I didn't say what I wanted to say. Because I just didn't want it to become a topic in the Norwegian class about Dave feeling like shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was hurting, and it was a temporary thing. It wasn't like necessarily a depression thing. I guess my, you know, I'm going this far. I quit smoking weed 3 or 4 months ago, and the first 2 months were great, and then the last 5, 6 weeks have been fucking horrible. And I just didn't want to get into all that.
Yeah.
In a class, and that's, you know, I think people don't want to be pitied. They don't want to be, "Oh, are you okay?" You know, when you're pissed and angry at the world or yourself or whatever, like, it's almost the last thing you want. But it really depends on who you're telling it to.
Right.
If I would have been in a different setting, I would have said it. But it just in a class, you know, no, I don't want to say it.
No.
So it's like I get why people don't say shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, when you are going through something and you just feel sure you're the only one that feels this way, when you hear somebody else talk about what they're going through and it hits home with you, that's fucking priceless.
Yeah, that's powerful.
It is, and I've been through that a lot in my life, where you just might be some stand-up comedian or some movie you see that's thematically like what you're going through or whatever, and you just latch onto it as if it's like lack of a better term, the word of God or something in a way, like something hits you in a way that other stuff is not hitting you. And it's, you know, especially when you're going through such a tough time and talking to regular people who maybe don't deal with depression and stuff like that. You don't really want to hear from them.
No.
So like, I've been through a lot of heavy shit, and there's a part of me that would just like to move the fuck on. Just forget it. Just drop it and go, I'm not that dude anymore, and just move on. But then I'm racked with this feeling of responsibility because somebody or something got me through that. And I feel like if I just turn my back on that, then I'm not completing the cycle. And then I can't live with myself like that.
You're not paying it forward?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I owe huge
debt.
Mm-hmm. To the universe. So, and I gotta work.
So you had people like in your life that kind of helped you like get to the stage where today, which is, you know, like first and foremost alive.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So then you feel some like responsibility for the others.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, it's like we both work in a place where there's people of all ages, but you know, like with age comes, you know, wisdom and or bitterness, regret,
both,
and it's like, and all that. There's a duality to everything, right?
Yep.
So, do you think, like, for obviously, this might be a stupid question, but we're just riffing. Who is it harder for? Do you think? Just to ask like a pointed question.
What do you mean?
It's like, do you think it's more difficult or less difficult the younger / older you are to deal to when dealing with this kind of stuff?
Younger has to be, because you don't have the information.
Right.
I've got, you know, suicide runs in my family, and all those people were old. They just were like, fuck this, I don't care, I have all the information I need, and I just don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
But when you're younger, you don't have the information. You have all the feelings, you have all the shit, but you have no way to process it. And I never in a million years thought I'd be 47 in Norway doing what I'm doing. I was sure as shit I would be dead before 30. It's something I just felt inside.
Yeah.
And maybe I was supposed to have been.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what that was, because it was a valid feeling and a very clear feeling. Here I am. And I think for the younger people, because, you know, there's like a saying that if you commit suicide, you never live to regret it or something.
Yeah.
But if you actually go through suicide survivor stories, the instant they pull the trigger, the instant they jump off the bridge, the instant they do whatever it is, it's a flood of regret and the adrenaline to stay alive.
Sure, yeah.
That's key information.
Yeah. Because
you don't die like in the movies and just be like, and all like whatever. Like, you go out like you came into the world screaming like a baby. People should know that shit. Yeah. That's key information.
Yeah, because we're just unwrapping. In the beginning here, unwrapping like a very obviously for a lot of people a difficult topic. We're talking about it because it's not normal to talk about it, especially here in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's a key information. I think I agree that it's like we should also talk about that when we're talking to people maybe who's going through that stuff. It's just like there's a lot of data and statistics here.
Yeah,
that are supporting the fact that if you do attempt, you're gonna regret it. I might be pulling this out of somewhere, but I read somewhere or somebody told me at one point in school that it's kind of impossible to kind of like hurt yourself. I mean, you can't really punch yourself as hard as you can in the face. And some teacher at some point in my life told me that this is like a prevention for self-harm thing that is hardwired into us. And then depression with like suicidal tendencies kind of cuts that connection, right? So there's almost like a medical scientific link to say that something's wrong
here.
You know, this isn't obviously there's factors, there's emotional factors into it, but there's like cold, hard, you know, scientific stuff happening to support that this is wrong. This is something that should not happen at like a, as a human being.
Right.
And then, yeah. So I think that's like important to say that you're not supposed to from like a nature, yeah. from nature's point of view. Does that make sense? That you're not supposed to kill yourself.
Yeah, right.
In that sense.
Well, that's, you know, and that's the thing when you're a kid, it's scientific information you don't have when you're a teenager, right, and yeah, all that, yeah. You know? And like, and you're convinced when you're younger that there is no other way to fix this. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of ways. Usually medication, you know, I'm bipolar, type 1, ADD, ADHD, a bunch of extra letters. I've never been diagnosed schizophrenic, but if you read through what it is and you know me, you're like, that sounds like Dave. And the depression I dealt with was so fucking bad. I mean, that's why, like, I was shooting dope. I mean, I was shooting speed and heroin by 18. We were doing speed by 12. Mm. You know, like, I didn't give a shit about the party drugs. I just went straight to the hard shit. And because then it broke that depression, sort of. All of what I really, and we didn't know then, it was the 80s and shit, but what I needed was medication. Yeah. You know, I was, so the way that in one rehab thing when I was 16, the way they explained it to me is that I'm missing a salt in my brain kind of thing at birth that gives me balance. And if I don't take something to supplement that balance, I won't have it. But I'm like, yeah, fuck you. What do you know? You're just a doctor. I'll just use my dope.
There's salt in my brain, like, right?
Yeah, right. And what he was referring to is like lithium, you know? But then they had me on so much lithium that I was miserable, and then I just stopped taking it.
Is that what lithium does?
Well, yeah, it provides balance.
All right.
Not everybody. A lot of people are different, but that's one example.
And that makes you feel bad?
Well, too much of it, yes.
Okay.
But the right amount of it, which I'm on now, it's great. I actually feel like a normal human being. Mm. But that's the thing with first getting bipolar people to get tested and to even take medication is like, it's like 50%. They just won't. And then the ones that will take it until they're feeling better and then they don't want to take it anymore, yeah. Kind of thing. Or if it's making them feel worse, then they don't want to take it anymore. But what has to happen is if you're seeing a doctor and he's got you on medication that makes you feel miserable, you have to take it for 30 days and go back. Because that psych meds aren't like regular drugs where they just work instantly. They take time to build up in your bloodstream and stuff. And if you're feeling like shit, you have to complete the 30 days because the feeling like shit may go away, could get worse. It's all these things. And then you go back and you tell the doctor, I need a different pill. And then you have to do it again. Mm. I am going through this process. I did this here and they had me on Remeron, which probably is great for some people. I fucking hated it. And that's where I wrote the song Holding On. Right. That's where I was like, this is fucking shit. Like, I'm trying to get better. Things are just getting worse, you know. But we had gone through where over since the age of 16 till whatever I was, 35, whatever, had gone through all the major drugs. So then we went back to lithium. Mm. But he put me on a smaller amount of it with Seroquel. Bing. Everything just clicked into place.
Yeah.
But I had to go through that shit period and I had to see it through. But I was so fucking desperate because I was really on the edge of just killing myself that I wanted the help. So it's like, okay, fine. Is that what you want? Fucker, I'll do it. You want me to take the shitty pills for a fucking month? I'll take them all, whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And so I just started pouring it off into song lyrics as a way to just get through it.
Yeah.
But that's just, I mean, but the percentage of people that do that, it's so slim.
Yeah.
They would rather take the street drugs. Oh, I don't want that stuff from the doctor, but they'll shoot.
Definitely makes you feel better.
Well, but you know, they'll shoot whatever garbage into their arm, but they're, yeah. Oh, I don't want those pills from the doctor kind of thing. Like, I don't know if it's like a control thing. They feel controlled or something. I'm not sure, but I wanted help and I wanted out and I had done everything the fuck else to give me that point. So it was like the only thing I hadn't done in decades was actually listen to a professional and do what the fuck they're saying to do. So it was like it was the last line of defense,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it
fucking worked.
Yeah.
And then I'm able to, you know, I'm normal-ish, you know what I mean? But I can at least, I can blend in with the humans now and
yeah.
stuff, you know what I mean? And do human stuff and et cetera.
Is it good? You like humans?
No, they're exhausting, you know? But it's way better than it was before.
Yeah, that's
you
good.
Know?
That's great. You want to delve into the lyrics? We're mentioning Holding On?
Yeah, let's do it.
Go straight into it?
Sure.
So the title, Holding On.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty self-explanatory, would you say?
I think so.
Yeah.
What's the first line?
So the first line is, my family tree is rooted in misery.
That, there is a Dave Grohl documentary series on music called Sonic Highways,
yeah,
if I remember correctly. And they were showing him the roots of rock and roll that fell into gospel. And he is the one who said the line, he goes, man, all my heroes were rooted in misery.
Mm.
And it always stuck with me. But yeah, the family tree is definitely rooted in misery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some referral to your own family story there as well.
Of course.
Yeah. Because I've talked about it in like my own podcast. I asked quite a few people, like, why does all the best songs, why are they? Yeah, rooted in misery is kind of like the perfect way of like putting it. Why is like the bad feeling and the worst of times is when you're most creative?
Yeah, right.
Is it because like it's like bad things, bad feelings, misery, pain? It's much more interesting than
I don't know.
Than the opposite.
A good love song is cool too.
Yeah.
You know, but I definitely don't identify with those songs as much as I identify with this really good song about being miserable.
Sure, yeah.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, yeah. So the next line, got a big black hole where my soul should be.
Yeah, that one, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's accurate still.
There's something missing there.
Yeah, there's still something missing. I'm not wired like a regular people.
No. Symphony of noise inside my head. Maybe I can rest when I'm dead.
Yeah. Just exhausted. All that shit going on in your brain. I once counted at a really manic time how many trains of thought I had going on, and I counted 28. But now that I realize it, I didn't realize that counting all those counted as a train, so it was actually 29.
That's it, 29 like thoughts and at the same time. So you're a good multitasker then, for better or worse.
I guess.
And then what I'm guessing here is the, because I haven't heard the song yet, but I've been reading the lyrics today. So this is what I'm guessing is like a chorus line. Don't get mad at me for not holding on. You never would have held on this long.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to talk a bit about that?
Honestly, it's a, I didn't think I would say this out loud. It's a pre-suicide song.
Yeah. Who's the you in this one? Do you want to talk about that?
What was the context?
This is like you would never would have held on.
Yeah, like the people who the people like well when you the people that complain that you killed yourself.
Yeah.
It's like you wouldn't have gone on as long as I did. So don't fucking bitch.
Yeah.
Which is fucked up, but
like a walk a mile in my shoes kind of thing.
Sort of thing, yeah.
Sort of thing, yeah. Stuck in the tar pits, I can't break free.
Yeah, that's self-explanatory,
yeah,
right?
It's like you're stuck, and it's like tar is like oil.
Yeah, they had a thing. They would take us to in Los Angeles, the La Brea tar pits, and it was this dinosaur exhibit of how the dinosaurs used to get stuck in the tar, and the harder they tried to get away, the faster they would sink.
Yeah.
And so it's a La Brea tar pit shout.
And obviously, it's like, save yourself because there's no saving me. And it's like, for me, it's the old, like, you can't really help anyone that doesn't want to be helped, right? So this is.
Well, save yourself because, but it's
C-O-U-S. C-O-U-S, yeah.
Which is short for cousin. And it's actually a line to my cousins whose fathers have killed themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is specific.
But you never catch it unless you read the lyrics.
No. and I'm not a natural English speaker, so just
right. Like, it's a great, yeah. It's LA slang for something. Really buried in there.
Give me more pills. These don't work anymore. This is a reference to like what we talked about
the
already.
The Remeron thing, yeah. Because I need more. These don't work.
You need more, and then you need less, and then you need even more, but with combinations of others. And then it's just like this frustration. Give me more, till I hit the floor. Thing, just like I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll see it through. And this is like the after the break. There, this is my favorite line. I'm hanging on by a bag of dope. That's pretty good.
One of the surest reasons. I mean, there's many factors that brought me here. But one of the surest fucking ways that I survived most days was just having a bag of dope.
Yeah.
Just going, you know, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I got a quarter ounce. I got a bag of new syringes. Like, I'll get through. We'll worry about it tomorrow kind of thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm hanging on by a bag of dope. I'm hanging on by a neck and a rope.
Yeah. That's a very good line. I like that a lot. I mean, it's like, don't get me wrong. It's pretty dark, but it is a dark subject.
It is.
For it. But I like it. I like when things are especially for these kinds of topics and subjects. I like it when people are direct and you don't.
Yeah, I didn't want to dance. I didn't want to dance. It, you know? I was pissed. I was miserable, I wanted to just spell it the fuck out, like a suicide note in a way.
Yeah.
And actually, that's probably what it is.
So then we have the choruses again. But let's talk about how music can be cathartic. Like, do you feel that way?
Oh yeah.
It's like for panic attack. Is panic attack and like a cathartic thing?
It is. It's also, it's heavy. Like, I don't write anything that I couldn't put on my headstone, my gravestone. Yeah. You know what I mean? So then, like, and it's always really heavy stuff. I figure there's two things. I wanted the music to be something that you could be black, white, young, female, male, gay. It doesn't matter. You can address it to them, you know?
Yeah.
And there's two things that everybody understands, I think, in a way. And that's joy, like we talk about love songs.
Yeah.
And there's misery. And so Panic Attack writes in the key of misery.
That's so good. That's so good. That's a minor key, eh?
I'm not sure. You're the producer. You tell me.
So from Panic Attack, we've mentioned the Suicide Fest. Do you want to give it like a brief history and where it's at now?
Yeah, we started that at Tosenna in 2016 on September 10th. We did this like art show thing, released an album. We played with Nag and Upskirts. The art that we did, a flood took it all away. So if you weren't there and didn't see it, then it's gone.
Is this the thing where, I think we've talked about this before, is this the thing where it's like it was one day in 1986 or something?
No. Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly.
The day after
Cliff Burton died. Yeah. Yeah, like a really sad day in 86. So we built the whole room that way for the video. Yeah, exactly. So then 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20. So we did 5 years and we did 6 shows because we did 1 year. We did a show in Sandnes as well. And we raised a lot of money for Mental Health of Ungdom, or the at-risk kids in our town. But it's kind of morphed. Alarm, which is a company in Hillevåg that deals with, like, that helps drug addicts and their families and stuff, they got some of the press, stuff from it, and they were really interested in it, and they've been looking for somebody to talk about suicide sort of thing. And so it's become that. And so I'm working with them now. And our first event is coming up here in a couple weeks. And so Suicide Fest is gone legit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got out of the punk rock, the moldy punk rock room, and then we're going legit.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. Monica's here. Maybe she could tell us some more about it and what Alarm is, and yeah.
Pass over the mic, Dave.
Yeah.
Hei.
Hei.
Monica?
Ja.
Hva ditt fulle navn?
Jeg heter Monica Lerang.
Monica Lerang.
Mm.
Og hvem du?
Du, jeg jobber på Alarm. Jeg jobber på Alarm.
Alarm?
Mm.
Og hva Alarm?
Alarm en bruker- og pårørendeorganisasjon.
Mm.
som hjelper rusavhengige. Og bak rusavhengige så det jo veldig mye issues. Rusen jo bare et symptom.
Et symptom på noe et større, sier man problem, eller sier man traume, eller hva sier man?
Det jo et problem.
Det et problem, ja.
Ja, som kan komme av et traume.
Ja.
Ja.
Ok, så dere, da tar dere det pårørende senter, så tar dere kontakt med, eller folk tar kontakt med dere?
Ja, det et lavterskeltilbud, ja. Sånn at ingen trenger å få en henvisning fra lege eller noe sånt for å komme til oss.
Ja.
Det bare til å komme.
Det bare til å dukke opp.
Vi har en nettside der det står telefonnummer og...
Ja, ja, ja.
Ja.
Så hvordan hørte du om Suicide Fest?
Nei, ja, det var vel egentlig helt tilfeldig, for jeg traff Dave før jeg visste om noen ting. Og så helt tilfeldig så jobbet jo med de samme tingene. Eller jeg jobber jo i helsevesenet, og han gjør det han gjør. Så bare satt med og snakket en kveld, og kom på en glimrende idé. Og så tok vi det ned til sjefen vår på Alarm, sjefen min da, og presenterte det, og de ble jo kjempegira. For det at i år og i fjor, så har jo selvmords, altså, folk tar jo mer liv av seg nå enn de noen gang har gjort.
På grunn av pandemien?
Ja.
Ja. Jeg tror det er sikkert mye sånn selvforklarende i det. Man snakker jo mer om isolasjon, depresjon, det nå, føler jeg da, enn det vi kanskje gjorde før. Fordi flere går igjennom isolasjon, og jeg blir liksom sånn tvungen til å holde seg inn. Flere sånn liv som før kanskje ikke har blitt pårørt voldsomt av mangel, sier mangel på jobb, mangel på uttrykk, altså det kunne rett og slett bare leve et liv da. Så kanskje sånn, så har man kanskje fått kjent på det på i et sånn større sånn fellesskap. Merker dere at det er flere som kanskje sånn, tar kontakt, eller flere som er interesserte i det?
Det er veldig mange som påvirker av denne her pandemien. Og jeg tenker, vi mennesker er jo, vi liker jo å være sammen. Og når vi blir isolerte, så er jo det gjør jo noe med oss.
Ja, ja, ja.
Og jeg tenkte bare med meg selv, så tenkte jeg at det, men når vi begynte i mars, sant, 2020, så tenkte jeg, nei, ja, dette skal gå bra. Nå skal vi kose oss hjemme, skal kose meg med ungene, og være positive da, sant, til å være isolerte. Men jeg kjenner jo med meg selv også, og jeg har ikke noen sånn kjempestore issues, men jeg kjenner at den isolasjonen har gjort masse med meg da. Det kommer snikende.
Det kommer snikende inn, ja, ja.
Den der ensomheten, den der jeg er annerledes enn andre, sant, føler jeg litt sånn rar. Ja, sant, ja. Skjønner du? Så, men når meg og de begynte å snakke da, så ble jo Alarm giret på dette. Og fokus, altså, fokuset på selvmord, det er jo ingen andre som driver med det, så å si her. Så det ble litt sånn nytenkende.
Ja.
Så vi søkte penger fra helsedirektoratet, og fikk ganske mye penger.
Ja, ok.
Ja, så de stoler på oss.
De stoler på dere, ja. Det er kjekt om dere er flinke på det dere gjør.
Ja, ja, men vet du, vi er jo helt i oppstarten av dette, ja, her da.
Ja. Jeg synes det er jo spennende, og det viser jo liksom at det er behov og en vilje. For det er ingen som altså, sånn møter man, siden det er vanskelig å snakke om, altså privatperson til privatperson. Har dere før dette her gjennombruddet, da kan vi jo på en måte kalle det, har dere noen gang møtt, altså når dere har lyst til å drive og være, sånn som jeg nevnte, sånn lavterskeltilbud, at alle kan ta kontakt, enten om du er direkte pårørt, eller om du er pårørende, hvis jeg har forstått det riktig. Alle kan liksom også komme inn og få kontakt med noen. Har dere møtt noe særlig sånn motstand? Eller, sånn at, eller i den formen at dette her er vanskelig å snakke om, og nei, men dette her er det ikke sånn vi skal, dette skal psykologene ta seg av, eller et eller annet sånn, i den duren der, har dere møtt noen, eller har det vært å åpne dører og gjest kongen fra dag 1?
Tenker du da om personer har vanskeligheter for å si at jeg ønsker ikke å leve lenger?
For eksempel det, ja, ja. Eller fra andre, fra alle som instanser, når dere skal etablere, har etablert organisasjonen, eller ja, hva det er, altså, sånn, har dere merket liksom at det er, ønsker folk dette her sånn supervelkomment, eller er folk litt sånn redde og skeptiske, eller hvordan er det? Hvordan har det vært?
Jeg tror at vi i Norge er ganske redde for å snakke om selvmord.
Ja.
Jeg tror det.
Ja.
Jeg tror at vi er veldig, ting skal være veldig litt sånn overfladisk, Og så er det greit å finne mange andre problemer å fokusere på, men ikke liksom det som det faktisk gjelder da. Ja.
Så har dere et mål?
Ja. Vi har, altså nå er vi jo helt i oppstarten av dette prosjektet. Og det som vi skal ha fokus på da resten av året, det er åpenhet i forhold til selvmord, og forebygging av selvmord, hjelper med det. Og da vil det bli et lavterskeltilbud der vi skal ha faste temakvelder, hvor det skal komme profesjonelle inn, sant? Vi tror veldig på kunnskap, sant? Hva er dette her? Hva tanker? For jeg tror mange av de som går og ønsker å ikke leve lenger, de vet egentlig ikke hva som skjer inni deg.
Nei.
På en måte.
Man er kanskje veldig redd da. Altså, sånn,
ja, og så vil man ikke si det høyt, sant? For det er veldig tabu. Og hvis du sier det høyt til folk som er glad i deg, venner og sånn, så kan de få panikk, sant? Nei. Og vi vil liksom lage et trygt rom der folk kan få lov til å sitte og si du, jeg ønsker ikke å leve lenger uten at folk skal få panikk. Vi ønsker bare å snakke om det, for den healing-effekten av bare å kunne snakke om dette åpent, uten at du må gjøre noe etterpå, eller at noen forlanger at du skal gjøre noe etterpå, er veldig verdifulle.
Har man noen sånne, hvordan er det dere sånn opererer i, altså, for da er dere liksom sånn en først og fremst i altså første instans der, fra de sier jeg ønsker ikke å leve lenger. Da er dere først og fremst en samtalepartner som har kunnskap og som jobber med at det er du må du bare arrestere meg hvis dette her blir sånn weird å si, men at det første setningen tilbake inn, da blir sånn sånn, ok, ja vel. Så det er sånn, ja, ok, det er du. Det er sånn, sånn for å ta på en måte litt brådden av det.
Ja, ja. Det er derfor vi har Damon, vet du, for han er rett på sag.
Veldig.
Sant? Yeah, og det har vi masse å lære av.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring you in here, because we're talking about, I know Norwegian ain't your forte.
Well, pieces,
it?
Man, pieces.
so we can bring the mic. Because we're just talking about, like what Alarm is doing is... being a place and having people there, so when people do say, I don't want to live anymore, I don't want to do this, I want to kill myself, that the first response isn't with panic, shame, guilt, even like more added stress than pressure in an already stressful and pressurized situation, right?
Yeah.
And for Norwegian people, just saying that kind of stuff is... difficult being open and honest. What is your kind of, because I know you talked about like your own experiences for years now as a person like who's, you know, as an American and as a person who's lived in and been a part of Norwegian society for so long, you kind of have like a double vision, you can kind of see the whole picture, right?
Yeah.
Is there, because suicide and obviously the things that lead up to that is a global human thing.
Yep.
Right, but is there the differences in like the cultures, like because we're saying that it's like it's nice to have you there because you are direct about it, you're not afraid. I think the last time you were on the podcast Loden, we tried to set a record for how many times we can say the word suicide, right?
I think you're right, that's right.
Yeah. We did that and someone actually counted it.
Yeah, Paul Murphy.
Paul Murphy,
he won a t-shirt. Yeah.
So is that, it's like, that's, and that's also part of, like, your thing, right? It's like, your credo is, like, say it.
To break the ice. Like, break the ice. Just get it out in the open, like, you know, just to make it. And that's the thing with Alarm, too, is if we can catch them before they're at that such critical place, you know, like, by discussing it, people, because, you know, most people don't wake up one morning and suddenly have suicidal thoughts. Yeah. It happens, but usually it's a gradual thing that they've got in the back of their head, and it's something they keep to themselves. And the more we can get the discussion going and just have it open and have it not be so taboo.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't say for sure. I don't know, but it would seem to me similar to being gay in the 80s and then back, like where you're this thing, you're just born this way, you're just doing what you do, but everybody else decides it's wrong and we don't talk about, you know, and where you have to carry around this thing inside of you that no, you can't discuss with anybody, you know, something in that lines in a way, because I think that a lot of the suicidal people are just simply born with that voice. It's just, they call it a genetic predisposition. Maybe it ran in your family, maybe this or that, you know.
Right.
But some people get sad and then they start thinking, oh, this, but I think a lot of times it's people who've been carrying that for as long as they can remember.
Yeah.
I would have to say, I'd have to be, I don't know the actual statistics on that, on who just suddenly had something bad happen in their life and they're like, fuck it, versus who carried along. But it's so extreme, like you said, about punching yourself to go against. They say there's two things that every human's born with, and it's a fear of heights and loud noises. It's just, you know, you hear loud noises, you run, you know, you're born with that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure what you were saying has got to be in the top 10. Oh, yeah, if you hear something loud, run. If you see cops, run. Don't jump on, don't get on the edge of the roof, you know what I mean? Yeah, and exactly. Don't kill yourself. It has to be in that top 10 of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years of evolution that just teaches you not to punch yourself in the face kind of thing. So to go against that.
Because we also have like pretty strong as mammals, animals in general, we have a pretty strong sense of protecting and our own lives and staying alive.
Right.
You know, that's why we get hungry, we eat.
And to go against that, to get on the edge of a bridge, to put a gun in your head, to cut your, you know, to all these things, that's a lot of steps past everything inside you telling you don't do this. So it's got to be heavy to get you to that point. You know, there's some people who get in trouble with the law or this, that, and the other. They don't deal with the consequences, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But that's rare when it's suicide statistics. I don't think that's got to be micro on the grand scheme of things. I would have to believe that it's chronic depression most, at least better than half of the time. I'd have to believe. I don't know. I would need a really well-versed doctor to convince me of otherwise. Sure. You know what I mean? It's this gradual point that you build up to, and what we'd like to do is catch some of these people before they get that far, and to also let people know what the warning signs are if somebody they know is going through something and what to do about it, what to say, what not to say, so on and so forth, you know what I mean? To like build a community in a way of safe people to talk to, you know? You know what I mean? Am I explaining this correctly? I got about 20. Duolingo says I understand 25% of Norwegian, so I understand like the little words, like one word, like this one, blue bird window, like I catch, you know. But is that?
Jeg kan jo bare tilføye noe da, og det jo at vi har jo et langsiktig mål, og det jo at vi skal være et supplement til andre, for det jo hjelpetelefoner. Og det jo de som offentlige hjelpetiltak i forhold til selvmord. Men vi møter de face to face, ansikt til ansikt, menneske til menneske på et veldig menneskelig nivå da.
Og det sånn, det kan jeg ikke, sånn personlig da, så når vi i skolen eller sånn, ellers i livet, sånn, når vi hører om disse andre tilbudene, så det ofte assosiert liksom sånn med, du har sånn kanskje religiøse aspekter, sånn, sånn, ja, du kan ringe denne her telefonen, og så er det noen som snakker med deg, men, så, og ikke at det rett eller galt, men er det noe, altså, har du ikke et poeng i å på en måte være såpass åpen at det ikke noe annen bakside med det enn, altså bare hjelp og den personen å snakke med.
Og treffe like menn.
Ja.
Sånn, treffe folk som har levd med de tankene selv.
Ja.
Og der en sånn, du forstår hverandre da.
Ja.
Hvis at meg og deg sitter og snakker, og du ønsker å ta livet ditt, og jeg har vært der selv, så vil vi ha en felles forståelse, kun gjennom kroppsspråk og øyne, og det vil skape en trygghet.
Kan du si noe sånn, kjapt om, om nå til nå, er det en overvekt av forskjellige typer mennesker i forhold til alder, kjønn?
I forhold til selvmord, tenker du?
Ja.
Nei, det kan jeg ikke si. Jeg bare vet at det har økt veldig. Men jeg vet også at det er veldig mange unge som ruser seg og dør av overdose. Og eventuelt det, de vil ikke gå ut med hva dødsårsaken er, men ta livet sitt. Det er veldig mange unge i fokus nå, altså.
Ja. Og hvordan er det, altså, hvis man skal kjøre en kjapp sånn infomercial, har du webside? Hvordan, hvordan kommer folk i kontakt?
Du, søk på alarm, altså a-larm.no, så ligger all info der. Vi er både på Facebook, vi har nettsider.
A-larm. Mm.
Og så vil det komme, det vil komme mye media fremover om dette her, så da får han vite mer sånne jaktige ting.
Så følg med, følg med.
Men det blir veldig bra. Jeg tror dette her har med, dette er akkurat det folk trenger akkurat nå. Mm.
You want to sign us off, Dave?
Yeah, it was that part was probably frustrating for anybody who's not living in Norway, because there's so few of the world population that actually speak Norwegian, but it's about something that's happening locally. So do you want to do any of that in English and just break down what you said? Like, because you guys in Norwegian, it's like 10 minutes, but then when you go to English, it's like 20 seconds. So that's the part, like, you want to break it down.
Do you want me to translate everything I said?
Not everything you said, just take it down, like nutshell, they call it.
Oh my god, how will we do that?
I can try.
Yeah,
you can do it.
Okay, I can try it, yeah. So the last part.
Yeah,
for
anybody outside of Norway, because then they're just gonna be like, what the hell is happening? I don't know.
So we're talking about this local chapter called Alarm, and they're an organization that is targeting or like opening up places and offices for anyone struggling and willing and needing to talk to someone, and it doesn't have to be anything more complicated than just saying, going there, reaching out online, in person, whatsoever, and just saying you need or you want help or saying what's on your mind.
Yeah.
It could be as easy as, I don't want to live anymore.
Yeah, right.
And then there at Alarm, you'll meet people a lot. I'm not sure, but a lot of the people who work there have some personal experiences with that, either for themselves or via family members, friends, what have you. So it's a place where you can come for whatever help you need at that moment. And the big issue is, you know, putting the emphasis on reaching out, as we've touched upon earlier, that reaching out, especially for Norwegian people, we have this reputation, I know, because I have a lot of friends who doesn't come from Norway and can kind of see it from a different perspective. And I think this might be true for all the Nordic countries. Because, you know, we're small, well, not in size, but country-wise, we're not that many people, and we live way in a dark, cold place of the world. And even though everything's kind of, on the surface, very comfortable, safe, everyone.
Coastally. Yeah. You guys are so goddamn
very
coastally.
Cozy. Yeah.
Fuck.
We like it cozy, you know?
Yeah.
And on the surface, that can seem pretty good, you know? But mental health is a universal thing, and it doesn't really matter if you're rich or poor. It's like, when life sucks, it sucks.
Yeah, right.
Just point blank, right? So that's what Alarm is a physical and online place where people can connect and reach out.
Right on. Okay.
I think that pretty much nutshelled
it. Yeah, yeah. See what I meant? Yeah. 30 seconds. 30 seconds. That's, I don't know what it is, but yeah. You know, there's options. When you feel that bad, there's options. And it's, I think that's the thing that people, especially if they're born with some kind of predisposition or, you know, whatever, that they just feel there is no other way. But I have been, like, since I started taking Seroquel, I haven't even thought about a syringe. And I mean, I shot dope for 20-something years, and just that was my tool to deal, you know, and I didn't necessarily, like, I wasn't like an addict kind of thing, like where I just had to have it. It wasn't like that. It was just that the depression was so fucking bad. That was my only tool to deal with it. And then since I've been taking Seroquel and lithium, like, I don't even, you know, I know how it is. Like, if you see a syringe and kind of get excited or remember the good old days, none of that. Because I don't feel so bad that I got to stick a bunch of junk into my arm just to feel something different. Mm. You know, trying to get away from the pill shaming, man, I think is bullshit. I see it online. I see, like, I've had friends like, I don't feel good. I don't feel right. I'm like, go see a doctor. No, man, just drink a beer. You know, so it's like this, especially in the men, this male thing. And it's fucking bullshit. Like, if you need drugs, I'm just a drug person. Like, I've needed drugs when I was younger. Then I was on a lot of shitty drugs in the in-between, so now I'm on the proper drugs, and like, but just, it's drugs, man. But it's fucking, you know, like, it's what they do to you, you know. And I don't see the big fucking deal, like, free drugs from the doctor, especially in Norway where everything's just free, like, yeah. I leave the Apotec, the pharmacy, with, they give me the big bag, you know what I mean? And it's fucking, it's awesome. Because I don't have to deal with all this other shit, you know, and it's just something that I have to do because that's the way I was born. Mm. You know, it's not. Yeah, like, it's like, so it's so fucking stupid. If somebody's born, like, you know, if they're born diabetic, you give them insulin. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is the problem? But there's something. Some hang up with the psych meds where a lot of dudes would rather just die alone in their garage then take the shit from the doctor. And then the thing of it is, like I said, you don't die peacefully. You die wishing you weren't doing what you're doing. Mm. And I got two uncles that both shot themselves in the head. And I think about that shit too. Like that, the click just before the bullet leaves the fucking barrel. That millisecond. Mm. Everything, all the statistics, all the information tells me, both of them, it was a huge flood of regret. Mm. The last fucking half second on earth was, oh, fuck, what am I doing? Mm. So sure to the buildup, so sure to pick a day, so sure to get the gun, so sure to load it, so sure to do all of it. But that last fucking second wasn't peaceful, like, oh, finally. It was all regret. I think that's key information, you know, and it's like there's options, and it's like if you're really sick of everything, then maybe it's time for some kind of change. Maybe it's time to do something somebody else's way, or, you know, to, if what you're doing for yourself is not working out, then, you know, maybe listen to somebody else, you know. The doctors, man, they're not nearly as stupid as I thought they were. You know what I mean? Like,
that's reassuring.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's like it's. I understand some people just kill themselves, and that's just the way it is. There's some people were just, like we've talked, I think, before, like the I think it's the buffalo that go off the cliff. Yeah. Like the buffaloes, you've seen that, right? They see the other ones fall. They know what's gonna happen, but they just go. It's just something. But then there's this huge number of people who, because a lot, you know, a lot of the going through the suicide survivor stories on YouTube, like if you're really suicidal and you're really, you know, I highly encourage going through those stories. A lot of these people are maimed for life. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it, where their life is way worse now than it was before, after an attempt kind of thing, you know? And I think it's time well spent just to hear it from somebody else's mouth that's been through it. The depression I was going through for my whole life, but every time I got into a hardcore overdose situation where, like, I'm about to die, I fucking fought. I never gave in. Mm. And so I know for myself, at least, that it's true. Once you get to that point, this other gear kicks in and goes, no, don't hit yourself in the face. Don't. You know what I mean? And you fight. And I know it for myself. And then you go and you look online and it's all, they all have that same story.
Yeah.
And I wish anybody who's feeling that bad knows that. You know?
Here, yeah. So, this has been the first episode of the Panic Attack Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you guys for doing it, what you're doing.
Thank you for producing this and putting this together, Harold, man. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you.